a lossy compression of it, a bad version of it. It's a pixelated JPEG of what's going on in your mind. Hello and welcome to Terrifying Robot Dog. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we're here to talk about how technology is changing the way we interact with the world. This week, we talk about Facebook announcements from their F8 conference. Please stay tuned. Terrifying Robot Dog is next. Wow. Dear listener, we've got a good show for you today. It's going to be crazy.
This is pretty cool.
The penultimate episode of season 4. End on a high note. No, penultimate is second to last.
I don't know. Is it? I don't know.
I forget. This is the last episode of the season.
It is, yes. It's been 15, and we're going to take a little break.
Mm-hmm.
How long a break, do you think?
What is it usually, like 4 weeks, 6 weeks? 6 weeks, I think, yeah. That'll be good, because it'll be just enough time to finish the book I'm working through for the next TRD book club.
Yes, we were going to do that this week, but we forgot to announce the book. You didn't finish reading it, and I didn't finish my reread.
Yeah, it's wicked long. In my defense, it is a wicked long book.
Yes.
But very good.
Yes. Maybe we should mention it now so people can read it over the break.
Yes. You'll need the whole 6 weeks, dear listener, to read or listen to or watch, I suppose, Leviathan Wakes. What's the background on the whole series? You know more about it than I do.
Yeah, that's the first book of the Expanse series. And it is, I can't give a whole lot of the background without giving away spoilers, but it is basically the story of humanity a couple of hundred years from now and their expansion out into the galaxy, colonizing Mars and the asteroid belt and outer planets and things like that. And there's more to it, but I'd be giving away spoilers at that point. So that's.
And hilarity ensues. Great book. Absolutely loving it. And I'm going to be sorry when I'm done, but it is super good.
There's five more in the series and a sixth one coming out this year. So
good.
Something to hold you over until Peace Talks comes out. Yes.
I can't wait. I already told Erica when that book comes out, I'm going to disappear for at least 2 days.
Yeah, I'm going to take some time off work.
Mm-hmm. Only been waiting for it for what, 2.5 years?
Feels that way.
Yeah. All right, dear listener. So if you want to sort of participate in the book club, then get yourself a copy of Leviathan Wakes and start plowing through. I'm sure you'll find that it is a page turner.
Yes, it's a good mix of hard sci-fi and like politics. It's very, very interesting.
Mm, and just, it's super, and I want to say psychological. It like really gets into the, spends a lot of time not glossing over how crazy it is to live in space.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Trying to choose my words carefully. Really, really good though. And apparently it's a show. I haven't looked into that at all, but
the show is good too, but the books are of course better just because you get so much more depth, but yeah, it's a very good show. I would recommend watching the show after you've read the books.
Yeah. That's my plan. All right, cool. Should we have any other, I don't think we have any other housekeeping. Move on to the feature.
Sure.
Okay, dear listener. So, what was the date? Was it last week? I think it was last week. April. What month is this? Yeah, it was about a week ago. Facebook had their annual conference, which is called F8. I think I'm probably am I the only person in the world who thinks what they mean by that is fate?
No, because that was my first thought as well.
Right. They say F8, but I think they think fate. At any rate, he said, rhyming.
Rhyming.
There's a very, very clear path that they're taking in both short and long-term ways. So they've got a clear overarching strategy. They clearly are betting heavily on a future, a particular future. And they are doing, they're implementing tactics at every level, short-term and long-term, to achieve that outcome. It's kind of impressive, actually.
it is.
That focused.
Yeah, they are. They're very focused on it. And like you said, even the short-term changes they're making now, they're doing little things now that are useful and usable and beneficial now. But then you can sort of see how it all comes together toward this one larger, far-off focus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So to let the cat out of the bag and start with not bury the lead, the quote that Zuckerberg really wanted everybody to write down at the beginning of the keynote was that Facebook are making the camera the first AR platform. And that's basically the near term move. And if you follow the tech press at all, you are familiar with everyone goofing on Facebook for ripping off Snapchat filters.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Facebook can't innovate anymore. They're just copying Snapchat. Evan Spiegel is Facebook's head of product, so on and so forth. It's like very funny. They're kind of just ripping on Facebook as much as possible. And you can sort of see without in absence of the strategy, it does look like they're doing exactly that. So across all of their platforms that include camera access, they've basically been rolling out a ripoff of Snapchat filters that, you know, put dog ears and a tongue hanging out of your mouth and stuff like that. And I have to admit, as corny and meaningless as they are, the kids love them.
Yeah.
They're super fun, funny. You just laugh your head off. Even, you know, like if I'm being honest, I will literally spend 15 minutes with the kids, like swapping faces and doing like voice swaps. And it's pretty funny. And to imagine, you know, and it's in a really, it's really poorly not implemented. Like the smartphone's a sort of bad place for it to exist. And still it will suck you in. It's like, it's good enough and funny enough that it can turn into a time suck.
Right. Right. It doesn't have to be photorealistic. It just has to be amusing.
Exactly. Right. So like I said, the phone is not really the best place for this because it's so trapped inside the phone. But since we spend so much of our time sharing photos back and forth, it kind of works. So you can make a little video of yourself, I don't know, with like birds flying around your head and like glowy eyes, and, you know, send it to somebody in a messenger, you know, we'll share it over Twitter or through Facebook Messenger or any other one of these platforms, and it'll play there. So it's kind of like, okay, mm-hmm. we're pushing these stickers back and forth, but they're not real time. You're not experiencing it in real time. So the person on the receiving end isn't, you know, for example, isn't controlling the filter on my face.
Right.
I composited an animation and I sent it to somebody.
Yeah. Whereas it would be much more entertaining if I was controlling your face filter.
Totally. Right. It'd be so much more fun.
Yeah. Especially if you didn't know I was doing it.
I was surprised that he actually said this, but I'm thinking the phone's kind of a weak place to have AR because you have to hold your phone up in front of your face all the time. So for anything, right. anything that isn't that sort of asynchronous hand it back and forth type of model. So like anything real time, you have to hold your phone up in front of your face as evidenced by sort of Pokemon Go zombies lurking through your neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, they're just like falling off the curb and running into things. And it's just not a great interface. The phone is not a good device, I should say, for an augmented reality interface.
Right. Pokemon Go, that game people played last summer.
Right. And so I'm thinking this. I'm like, yeah, whatever, Zuck. It's not right for the phone. There's some corner cases and some use cases, sure. I just don't think it's right for the phone. It needs to be glasses or contact lenses. And he goes,
right.
And he comes right as I was thinking that. And he goes, today it's the phone, but we are working hard toward a future where this experience exists on glasses and contacts in real time and is overlaying. I was like, wow, you went there. Okay. So
see, they're already reading your mind.
Cuckoo, cuckoo. I'm scared. So, all right. So to put it, I guess to summarize it, they are heavily investing in augmented reality. But it's not just augmented reality, though. It's just like mixed. I've seen people start calling it mixed reality.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot more, too.
Because they're also, you know, they're kind of nipping around the edges everywhere they can. So they're doing all this, pushing all this AR stuff to the phones, and in kind of a backhanded compliment to the fact that they ripped off Snapchat, you know, or backhanded compliment to Snapchat because they've been ripping off their filters. He said something like, we're starting with all the basic filters, all the obvious things.
All the obvious.
But then he went on to demonstrate some things that were truly eye-popping. Where you would enter text that wouldn't just be overlaid on an image. It would actually be rendered into the 3D space in a way that was realistic. So if you imagine a picture of your breakfast and you add, you know, you type in these eggs are delicious or whatever, instead of it being just like written across the picture, it sort of grows up in 3D out of the desk behind the eggs.
Yeah. So they're revolutionizing internet memes.
Yeah, exactly. So instead of 2D memes, but it's like in the picture, it's
right,
not over the picture. And and it's animated and it goes behind things. So like behind your...
Wow.
Yeah. So like if you have a coffee cup there and you have like steam coming out of it and there's a, you know, a fern and you put all flowers coming out of it, you can like pan around and look around it. And, you know, there was one where he put like sharks, little cartoon sharks, like swimming around the bowl of cereal, and the desk was acting as the water, and they would like dip under the desk and disappear, and then they'd pop up through the desk and they'd go behind the cereal bowl and they would disappear. So it was totally aware of the three-dimensional space, which is
from that 2D image.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, it was, wow. It was a live feed of a 2D image. So not only was it aware of the depth and the like the edges of the objects and what the objects are. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, as he moved his phone around, it was updating in real time. So it was like, it's certainly the next level of the Snapchat stuff. It's not something I've ever seen from Snapchat, that's for sure.
Yeah.
They demonstrated, I was just looking at my notes. They demonstrated some other stuff that was pretty amazing, but is nothing compared to some of the other announcements. But, you know, like they took a 2D photo and created a 3D scene from it. Mm-hmm. Which was amazing. So, you know, you imagine a picture of your office and you just like a regular picture of an office. And then they applied their, you know, AR sauce to it. And you could then, you know, drop balloons in the room and they would bounce off the objects the way the balloons really would. So it looks at the 2D photo. It understands that a chair is a chair and like the planes of the chair and applies physics, you know, it throws digital elements into the room and the physics are right. So it understands.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's just shocking in real time on a phone. It was like, well, okay, and that wasn't even that big a deal. That to me, that was almost like them trying to backfill. You know, like, huh, how are we going to make all this boring static 2D content a little bit more interesting?
Right, right.
Okay, so the image recognition stuff that they're doing, and this is all, you know, this is all AI behind the scenes, machine learning, and all that fun stuff. Mm-hmm. The stuff that they're doing is it's not just face detection, it's object recognition, I think was the term they used. So they recognize that a chair is a chair and has these planes and it's going to have these properties. And if a ball bounces off a cushy chair, it's going to bounce a particular way, different from the hard floor, stuff like that. There are some other stuff, annotating menus in coffee shops and stuff. So like if you walked into a coffee shop and you went to the trouble of holding up your phone at the menu board hanging behind the baristas, you could see, you know, next to the menu items, be like your friend's face and be like, oh, I love this coffee. You know, it'd be like filtered down to
right.
The face. I was like, yeah, that's the thing that Yelp has been promising for 10 years, almost 10 years. Yelp has been talking about, oh, yeah, we're going to have, you know, here's this. They even had it for, if they still have it, I don't know. You could like look at a map view and have like basically Google search results of like all the things in front of you. So you're like, okay, we're facing this way. Let's just turn around in a circle and see where there's a coffee shop near us or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not as exciting.
If that was in your glasses, it would be amazing. But the thing with the, like the coffee shop and the Yelp thing is that you have to think to do it. You're like, oh, you know what I should do? I should pull up my phone, unlock the screen, launch the Yelp app, drill through some menus to find this advanced feature, turn my phone sideways. Okay, everybody, hang on.
right.
Then now I'm going to, like a weirdo, spin around in a circle and be like, it's just so geeky and nerdy and it just reeks of, you know, everything looks like a nail. Like, oh, we can do this, so we should. But there's no, it doesn't address the use case in a way that is actually beneficial.
It's a poor user experience.
Yeah, it's a flashy demo that
right.
is just blown out of the water by a simple Google map search. You know, it's just like, Google map search is 100 times better than this. Or just like, mm-hmm. Hey Siri, where's the closest coffee shop?
Yeah.
So anyway, but that kind of stuff, if it wasn't locked away in the phone, it starts to get really interesting.
Yeah, if it wasn't locked away in the phone and if I didn't have to think, oh, let me open this app and run this query if it just popped up this little alert when I walked by something that had more information and I could blink at it or think at it and, mm-hmm. and get access to that.
Yeah. All of a sudden the friction flips. So mm-hmm. now all of a sudden it's more friction to pull out your phone and unlock the screen and do a Google search, it's more friction to say, hey Siri, where's the closest coffee shop? Because you can just look.
Yeah.
So the image stuff is suddenly becoming super interesting and it's breaking down into different categories. So they've been talking about a lot of the, you know, the Apple, Google, Facebook in particular come to mind, probably Amazon and Microsoft as well. They you know, with the machine learning stuff and like AI and image recognition, I just sort of all lump that into like, oh, there's a cat in, on the beach in this picture, right? Mm-hmm. And that is a use case, but they're also doing this stuff where that has, like I said, object recognition. So not only is there a cat on the beach, but it understands what a cat is and what shape it is. And if we're seeing this view of the cat, we understand where his joints and stuff are.
Yeah.
And we can take that into consideration for masking and what they called key point detection or skeletal tracking, which is a very scary thing if you hear coming from Facebook. Oh, you can track my skeleton? Well,
that's not creepy at all.
No. Yeah, it's not exactly what it sounds like. So the demo they showed, which I think was a great example, was a guy doing parkour through a public park.
Mm-hmm.
And they had him, as he was doing it, there was an overlay on him that perfectly masked where his body was and also showed the wireframe of his skeleton as he was doing it.
Okay. Yeah. So they're, by skeletal tracking, they mean more like motion tracking.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and it's okay.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. And again, it's where you said it's like they know what a human skeleton is like. So if they can detect one part, then it's maybe easier to defer to kind of infer the parts that may be obscured.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So I think all of that stuff, a lot of these capabilities are all stemming from the same understanding of the object. And it mm-hmm. allows you to do some potentially, you know, if you're thinking like Snapchat filters, it allows you to do some pretty hilarious stuff because you could take that you could mask out that single guy moving through that space and put something completely different in the background, like a green screen video without the green screen.
Right.
So that's, I mean, talk about hilarity ensues. I mean, like that is going to be super funny. But the brings up a side topic that we bring up a lot or that comes up a lot, which is that so much of our understanding of what's happening in the news and the world around us comes through this digital channel that it starts to, and as the capabilities to just cheaply and easily and with extremely high quality, manipulate video. Is like, what's real? Cooper the other day, he was down some, you know, kids YouTube rabbit hole, which got him into a zone that I was not happy with whatsoever. It's one of the few times he's seen a video that I was not happy about. And it was kids react to, I don't even want to talk about it. It's just so dark. It was kids reacting to a news event. Mm. And I'm like, Cooper doesn't need to know about this news event. And so we got to talking about, I'm sitting there eating dinner or whatever. And he comes up to me. He's like, is this, he tells me a name. Is this real? Cause he obviously had just heard some story. And he's like, is it real? And I was like, oh, it is real. How did he hear about that? And I was like, well, yeah, it's real, but it wasn't in the United States. And, you know, cause obviously the next question is, cause that happened to me.
Right.
And, you know, like child abduction type stuff. And I was like, I basically dodged. I was like, that happened in another country. That's not the kind of thing that happens here. So he's like, okay, he's a little bit relieved. But I started to get into it and he was like, because then he started asking me if he had seen, you know, he started to go back through his mind and be like, was this video real? Was this video real? Was this video real?
Mm.
And I'm like, no. And, you know, I'm like, look, people, and he's like, but it seems so real. And I'm like, yeah, but you can make fake videos, you know? And so I played him a couple of like funny YouTube videos where like, you know, the guy's throwing this Ray-Bans and they are perfectly landing on the other guy's face every time because they did them all backwards right. And he's actually pulling them. And I'm like, see, you can fake stuff. And like, here's an eagle taking a baby out of a park. It's totally fake. And here's a guy like boxing with a kangaroo and, you know, they're all fake. And then he's like, and I could just see it on his face. And even I started to be like, well, how do I know which ones are real?
Right.
You know, like what, like, how are we going to know? It gets, and in fact, this is going to be a major, for me, this is going to be a major talking point in when we do the book club of The Expanse. I think that in Leviathan Awakes, the security of the communication channels is a very interesting thing to talk about.
Yeah.
Anyway, so when you see this stuff and you're like, man, that's going to be so funny, ha ha ha. But also you could imagine someone creating like, you know, I don't know, taking a political figure or, you know, a policeman and completely changing the background context and inciting a riot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a little bit freaky. Anyway, didn't mean to take us down that rabbit hole. I couldn't help it, though. Like, what's real? Someone help.
Yeah, I could tell you were going to head that way as soon as you started talking about changing the background. I'm like, oh, here we go.
I remember how bad we talked about the George W. Bush video puppet a while back.
Yeah.
And that was not that great. It was okay, but you could kind of tell there's a little bit of uncanny valley going on there. This is much better. This is 100 times better. And it's like, oh man. Okay. So Facebook is all over mixed reality. They've got Oculus. They released a bunch of developer tools, React VR. They open sourced a bunch of stuff, like image recognition stuff. They open sourced a whole bunch of tools. VR Studio, what's it called? I think it's called VR Studio or Facebook Studio, something like that. Mm-hmm. So they're definitely trying to create a platform. They're making a platform play for developers to kind of bootstrap this new level of content, the kind of content that can't be viewed in a traditional way or can't be experienced or consumed in a traditional way. And they're being really smart about backwards compatibility so that, you know, if somebody has, if your friends, none of them have Oculus Rift, but you do, you can still have like a VR chat space conversation with them, with you feeling immersed and physically in this virtual space while they're just sort of viewing it on their phones. But you can still interact in a virtual space. It's just that you get a more immersive version of it.
Right. It's like Ready Player One, where there are the different levels of VR gear. Like some of it was really good and had haptics and all this stuff. And then some of it was just like, you know, Google Cardboard equivalent, that kind of thing.
Right. So like some of them had the full body suit and like like this station that you could run in and stuff like that. So actually the full body suit is kind of a nice segue into the next area, which is like work. Like if you think any of that, if you think anything we just talked about is crazy, it's like this is...
Yeah, hang on. We're not there yet.
Yeah, we're not there yet. So there's a talk, we'll link to it in the show notes, that a woman named Regina Duggan gave. She's a Facebook employee. She used to be at, I think it was Google X. She was at Google in research and development. And before that, she was, no big deal, director of DARPA. So she's got some serious track record, some good street cred.
One could say she's qualified.
Yeah. And she came out and said some stuff that was so over the top that even I was like, come on. But she's right. She's right. We both, and it's funny too, because we were both watching the video at the same time. But not in a VR chat room as we should have been. And we were both like sort of chatting back and forth, like the killer lines.
And quoting the same ones to each other.
Yeah, exactly. Quoting the same lines at the same time to each other. So she is leading an effort to cut to the chase, to allow you to type with your brain and to hear with your skin. And if that sounds crazy, just like keep an open mind for a second, because it makes a ton of sense when you really work through it. But you should want, it's a great talk. You should really, go to the show notes, click on the video. It's the title is Facebook Builds Brain Computer Interface for Typing from Thoughts and Skin Hearing. Crazy. So she says something that will resonate with longtime dear listeners. She says that, you know, even on a bad day, your brain is essentially processing, I think she said, 4 HD videos per second. So there's
that was the lowest number she could feasibly get it down to, making excuses for why you're not thinking so great.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, okay, you haven't had your coffee. It's a bad day. Normally it's typically, it actually is much higher than that.
Right. So like she said, your average person's brain capability is something like 40 high definition or 44K videos. I think that's what she said, not HD. 44K videos going simultaneously, but you're not using your whole brain all at the same time. So let's say it's a tenth, a quarter of that. So you're down to 10. She's like, oh, let's say it's like even you haven't had your coffee yet and you're down to 4. Your speech, typical speech patterns allow you to transmit. I don't remember what she said, but it was like, you know, of course, a crazy low amount of information, you know, an early dial up modem.
Right. 80s dial up.
Yeah. 80s dial up modem. And you've got, so what she says is, like the money quote was, she goes, speech is a lossy compression algorithm. And I was like, I want to hug this lady right now.
Like, I'd never thought of it like that before, but yeah, I guess it kind of is.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked plenty of times about text being a bad encoding algorithm.
Yeah.
But there's two things that I never thought about. One is that speech is also words. It didn't even click with me. It's like derp. And the other thing is, and this is the main thing, lossy.
I never thought of it as being like a compression algorithm.
Right.
But the idea of whatever you're speaking is, it's just a compressed version of what's in your brain.
Mm-hmm. A lossy compression of it.
Yeah.
A bad version of it. It's a pixelated JPEG of what's going on in your mind. So it's like, oh, like I think the term I've used in the past is that it's a sort of inefficient or a cumbersome encoding method, mm-hmm. like Base64. But she's right. It's more like JPEG.
Yeah, it is. It's more like a lossy algorithm because it's not just a bad encoding. Because if it was a bad encoding, all that stuff would still be there somehow.
Yeah, you're losing tons of information. And so this is where it gets super weird. Okay, so they were like, okay, let's say you could type with your brain, or you could not. That is what she says. Let's say you could type with your brain, and they actually do demonstrations of people typing with their brain, and it's like, okay. That's cool. But what if you weren't typing with your brain, you were just expressing your thoughts wirelessly?
And the computer was picking up on it and spitting out words on the screen.
Yeah. But then you still end up with text, which is still this mm-hmm. lossy compression algorithm. So what if there was a different way to receive it? And then she goes into, you know, the number of nerve endings in your skin and how big your skin is compared to other organs, and that your cochlea, is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Your cochlear? I'm not even going to try. Your inner ear thingy does this really complicated thing, but when you're only giving it words, it's got to encode. It's got to reverse or unencode. That's the word I'm struggling to find.
Decode,
right. Thank you. So you've got this rich, beautiful, huge 4K video of your thought playing in your mind, and you convert it into this piece of junk, still pixelated JPEG that you then transmit across a modem to somebody else who then has this almost magical ability to try and res it back up, as we used to say.
Mm-hmm. Upscale.
Yeah. Enhance.
Upscale your words. Yeah. Zoom. Enhance.
Yeah. And this is what this is so crazy. Learning a language is trying to do that reverse engineering. It's like, okay, it's like this thing that takes years to like, it's at least the writing part. It's like, okay, this thing that you're experiencing, your hand that has all these qualities and features, and that your skin and your nose and your eyes and ears are all transmitting all that wonderful information about your old leather wallet is transmitted into your brain, and you're going to say leather wallet,
and you're going to completely ignore many of the attributes of the leather wallet and any kind of, you know, that emotional feeling, because your leather wallet was a gift on your 18th birthday from your grandpa who
But so the person on the receiving end of the words leather wallet also has experiences with leather wallets. They're not the same though.
Right.
So they're not so they get the word leather wallet and it triggers sense memory, but there's, you know, going to be a pretty potentially, depending on the situation, there might be a lot of overlap. There might not be, mm-hmm. which is, you know, miscommunication, you know. So she goes on to say, in your mind, the word, the concept of a cup, your coffee cup, is not stored as the word cup in your mind, like C-U-P, of course, because there are different words for it in different languages. It's not stored there that way.
Yeah.
So if you could skip over changing the thought that you're trying to express, if you could skip over the words piece, whether it's speech or text, doesn't matter. If you could skip over the words piece and just express it to the other person, if there was the way to hear your thought on the receiving end, it wouldn't matter if you were speaking Mandarin or if you spoke Mandarin or English or Spanish. It wouldn't matter because you'd be transmitting the experience of a cup.
Yeah. You're transmitting the concept of a cup and all of the properties therein that, you know, that anyone knows.
Mm, super crazy. So I'm actually going a little bit beyond what she demoed, but the concept is there. We talked about this a long time ago, where it was like if you could directly express your thoughts, your emotion and the whole thing, if you could directly express that from one person to the next or broadcast it to a room, would you need music anymore? Isn't that what music's for? You know, it's like, does art matter? Like what happens there? It gets really crazy. There's a
You know, we talk about talked last week about technology's effect at strengthening relationships.
Mm.
That feels like it's almost going too far.
Right. She actually did bring up like, now don't worry, Facebook can't read your thoughts when you're wearing this thing. It's like, you know,
really?
Yeah. And then she gave what I thought was a ridiculous analogy of like, you take a lot of pictures, but you only choose which ones to share with Facebook. And it's like, so, and then she's like, so you have a lot of thoughts, but you'll just choose which ones to share with Facebook. And I'm like, what if you can't control your thoughts that well?
Yeah. Yeah. What if you can't? There's so many times I think things that I don't say.
Right. There's a funny story about the earliest text chat interfaces.
Mm-hmm.
It was probably a precursor to IRC, but the developers originally sent all of the keystrokes in real time so that there wasn't like a send button.
Okay.
And you know, it was more like a Google Doc. Like, you know, if you've ever collaborated with someone in a Google Doc, you can see all the typing that's happening everywhere at once.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided that it was annoying and that it was embarrassing too.
Yeah.
That they wanted to give people the ability to kind of like compose a thought, even if it was a short one, or compose an update or a message or a response, and then hit send and be like, okay, this is what I really want to say. Even though, you know, I'm sure anybody who operates in any of these interfaces, it's nice to know that the other person's typing, but you don't want to see all the stuff they're working through.
Right, right. The only time it really annoys me is when I see this, Jonathan Stark is typing, and you're typing for like 2 minutes, and then you just say, okay. Like, what? What did he not say?
In my defense, that comes from me putting my cursor in the typing field on my phone and then changing my mind. And I'm like, I'll do this on the computer later or something.
Later. Okay. Yeah.
It's pretty rare that I delete a giant paragraph that I've painstakingly typed. Anyway, so just to kind of put a bow on this, she does demo two things. This stuff's far off. I suppose it's obvious. It's pretty far off, but Facebook is working intently on this and they're betting the farm on this. And
they are. And I feel like while it's still far off, what they've accomplished so far is amazing.
Mm-hmm. The demos that they showed, there were two demos, there were a bunch of demos, but this particular one of there was a woman with, I think it was Lou Gehrig's disease.
Yeah.
And she was completely paralyzed. Couldn't move, talk, nothing. Just a prisoner in her own body. Like that, like that Metallica song, just like horrifying. And she had it was a surgical implant, which isn't, you know, they were like, we can't do surgical implants because that doesn't scale. But this particular woman had a surgical implant. She said it was about the size of a pea and it was placed in, you know, some appropriate section of her brain. And in front of her, there's a kind of like the interface that you'd get on a Roku where they're, you know, you've got this like picture of a bunch of letters on a grid and you can see this mouse moving around, click, mouse moving around, click. And she could type 8 words a second without moving.
8 words
without,
a minute.
Sorry, 8 words a second. Imagine that.
I mean, yeah, 8 words a minute.
I stand corrected. It was 8 words a minute without blinking or moving or breathing or nothing. Just thinking.
Yeah, this is already fast. It's faster than the interface that Stephen Hawking uses now.
And it's only about it's only about a third of the speed of phone typing.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not, you know, we're talking about wetware here. This is like an implant in her brain. So it wouldn't, you know, it's like a long way to go before this happens. But it worked. Like, I mean, if I was in this lady's situation, I'd pay any amount of money for this.
Right. This would be life changing.
Oh, kidding me? Like, you can't, it's like gives me chills to think about it. So what Facebook's shooting for in the near term, which seems reasonably attainable, I mean, given that they've attained this, is that inside of an augmented reality interface or, you know, basically a face mounted something, instead of having to use your hands to wave around to interact with stuff, you'll be able to have like a yes, no, click type of thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can, you know, in a situation, you don't have to have your hands involved. So something's happening and you can be like, you know, it's like, situation, yes or no. And you could be like, you could just think it and it would be good enough. So this is like a hat, something that would be on top of your hair. They seem to be pretty confident that they can get that working and that it's useful in a way that would be worth doing. I mean, you could easily imagine something like that going into Oculus Rift, which is already a big piece of gear.
Yeah.
You know, and if you've ever used cardboard, an older version of cardboard, it's really annoying when you know, it's like, how do I click on something? Like, I need to hit the touch screen. Like, what do I do? There's no way to do it. So if you could just like look at something and blink, which I think Google Glass supported years ago, or you could, you know, just think yes or no, that would be a big decrease in friction with an augmented reality or a virtual reality interface. So that seems totally doable. And then the flip side of it is the third eye suit that I've been wanting since I read Damon, which is this sleeve. In the demo, there's a woman wearing a sleeve, like a black neoprene, you know, just look like a just a arm warmer.
Right, like something sleeve of a wetsuit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And there's another guy with like an iPad interface where she had a vocabulary of 9 words that she learned in about an hour. And he would, and she was sitting in front of a 3x3 grid of blocks, physical blocks, and there were spheres, cubes, and cones or something like that. And they're 3 different colors. So he would say, he would pick combinations of choices. He would say action, shape, color, like lift the black cone. And he, no, he's just on the screen. She can't see it. He's just tapping these three things. And then you look over at her and she picks up the black cone. And then, you know, and she's not hearing anything. She's just feeling her this thing on her arm vibrate in a way that said, you know, pick up black cone to her. So there's no words, you know. So like the interface, and the interface had no, you know, his interface was just pictures and stuff. But
right. But then imagine his interface coming from his brain.
Right. So he thinks pick up the black cone. Her arm vibrates and she can react. It's, I mean, it's ESP. Like it becomes ESP. Is that the right word for it? I mean, you're not like reading someone's thoughts like against their will. Telepathy? Like insane.
Yeah, and like he can think it in any language he wants, and she can.
Right, because it just gets.
It's language independent there.
Right, because it gets translated into a vibration. I was like, oh, man. I was like, that is so cool. Anyway, you should totally check out the video. I think there are a couple of points where she kind of oversells it because she does work at Facebook and she does have to deal with like the kind of privacy implications and, you know, just all the Facebook stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. She has to market it.
Right. Like some of the things were super disingenuous, like her, oh, it's a false choice between, you know, she was kind of like interfaces like this will free us from the black box that we're trapped in. You know, we're all, instead of interacting with each other in a room, we're all staring into this black box in our hand. You know, we're not interacting with each other. But this neoprene sleeve and this helmet that you're going to be wearing, man, right. That's going to make us so much more human. I'm like, come on.
No, that's a little.
Yeah, it was a stretch.
A little far. But it is really, really exciting technology. And
yeah, it's super exciting. The whole notion of being able to communicate without words is like that. My head just exploded when she got to that part. I was like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you said, it's telepathy.
Mm. But like high bandwidth, you know, all of a sudden we're not on that 80s modem and the rush of information. Aren't you, Alexa?
She's very uncertain about the future.
She's nervous.
She is. Oh, that was great.
Yeah, that's probably a good place to leave it. Leave anything out?
We've made Alexa.
Yeah, we're making Alexa nervous. This is all going straight to Jeff Bezos's inbox, this whole conversation. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of season 4 of Terrifying Robot Dog.
Yes, it does. And do we want to pick a date we'll be back, or
let's put that in the email. I would need to think about it. I think you're right though. I think we normally take 6 weeks off and then come back. So that would put us somewhere like what, May, middle of June?
Probably so, yeah.
Mm. Well, dear listener, I'm sure your favorite podcatcher application will notify you with the next episode. But if you want to be, I don't know how to say it. If you want something more proactive, you're welcome to join our mailing list. All right. That's our show for this week and the season. I can't believe we finished 4 seasons.
I know.
I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we hope you join us again next time for Terrifying Robot Dog. Bye.
Bye.
Remember that email list I was just talking about? You can get episodes delivered straight to you with show notes, links to additional content, and oh, so much more. Plus, you can reply to any message and suggest topics for future episodes. To get the inside track, go to terrifyingrobotdog.com and look for the Keep Me in the Loop button. That website again is terrifyingrobotdog.com. See you next time.